On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For a dozen years now, the Republican Party has been large and in charge on Capitol Hill. By September 2006, with a rough war effort in Iraq and not much to show on immigration, earmarks, Abramoff, and deficit, the GOP looked in trouble in the midterm election. The president was fighting with some success on the national security issue, but the national intelligence estimate gave him headwinds, and Bob Woodward was unveiling deep internal divisions. Then, last Friday, came Mark Foley, Republican congressman and pornographic emailer to teenage pages. Now all bets are off. Republicans themselves are mad. Up next on Point, the Republican majority on the line, the Republican leadership in trouble. We will hear in this hour from National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee Chair Congressman Tom Reynolds of New York, from the campaign trail in his district around Buffalo, on the latest with GOP strategy and leadership in a storm. But first, we turn to pollster John Zogby, who just this week is releasing new polls on the House and Senate races. John Zogby, thanks for being with us. When were your polls taken in relation to the Foley outburst, and what do they show?
Well, half before and half during. So we polled from Wednesday of last week through Monday of this week.
Foley broke on Friday and kind of grew over the weekend. So it's sort of half and half before and after, yep.
That's right. Although I must tell you that we aggregated all the numbers. There were 7,500-plus calls, and discovered at least at this point in time that the numbers were identical, Democrat to Republican, Wednesday through Friday and Saturday through Monday, which is about right because, quite frankly, Tom, I operate from a 48-hour rule. It usually takes about two full days and nights for a big news story like that to really germinate.
Okay, 48 hours for you, about a month until the election. What do the polls show?
Right now, in 15 hotly contested Republican districts, Democrats lead in 11 of those. That includes incumbents and open seats.
They need to pick up 13. So at this moment, if you had to predict on the basis of your polls, do Democrats take the House or do Republicans hold on to it?
Well, actually, they need 15, and I think, frankly, that they do pick up the 15, possibly some additional ones.
So you're talking about at this point, and a lot of things could change, Democrats taking the House.
At this point, barring anything unforeseen, that's what it looks like. Hard to make a prediction in a volatile kind of climate. However, there does seem to be further developments since our polling on Monday.
Can you tell us about that polling, in races in particular that we might be interested in there? What do you see on the House side?
Oh, boy, there's any number of them. Let's take a look at the map. Minnesota 6, or actually even better, Henry Hyde's old district, Illinois 6, where Henry Hyde was a fixture there for three decades, and we have Amy Duckworth leading by 6 points. Bob Ney's district in Ohio is another one.
In scandal trouble there.
Scandal trouble, and in that district, Democrat looking to be on top there, too.
Mark Foley's district, Tom DeLay's district, are those automatic Democrat wins at this point or still contested?
You know, nothing is automatic, but those have to be looking pretty good. In fact, in DeLay's district, that was looking to be in the Democratic column even before this incident, and, certainly nothing would change that.
We're going to be talking with Tom Reynolds in a moment from New York State's 26th District, Western New York, around Buffalo. That was considered a shoe-in just days ago. Now the Foley business is whirling around him as well. Did you look at that one?
Not in this round, but we are looking at it. I can't report it. We're only partially through it. But suffice it to say, this could be a pretty big Democratic year after all. And Tom, I wasn't seeing it beforehand simply because while the Republicans were in bad shape, severely wounded, the Democrats seemed to be lacking a message, something to cohere their base to come out to vote. And I think that coherence came over the weekend.
So on the tail of a scandal, we're going to be looking at that some in this hour, plus Republican strategy now. On the House side, at this point, you're looking at Democrats pulling ahead, taking a majority. If the polls hold, of course, they could change. What about the Senate side?
Senate is not quite there yet. And interestingly, the convention...
Not quite there for whom?
Not quite there for the Dems. Just yet. You know, the conventional wisdom right along has been that the Democrats have a better chance in the House than in the Senate. At least in this first round of polling, that seems to be borne out. We have Democrats picking up, looking to pick up three seats as we speak.
But they need what?
They need six.
They need six. Some interesting results of your polls here. Virginia Senator George Allen had a lot of trouble in his competition with Democratic challenger James Webb, a racial convert talk and all the rest. He seems to be on a comeback trail, you find.
He seems to be on a comeback trail. And, yeah, I was the one poll that, in fact, had Webb up for a little bit. But Webb just doesn't seem to be catching on, at least not yet. And despite Allen's troubles, and he's not out of the woods, he seems to have at least consolidated his support.
What about Bill Frist's seat in Tennessee? You've got Democrat Harold Ford and Republican Bob Corker fighting for that one.
That's a very hot seat. Right now it's dead even, tied, although momentum Ford, or better yet, momentum away from Bob Corker, the Republican.
And how about Joe Lieberman and Ned Lamont in Connecticut?
That's been an up-and-down sort of race. Lieberman right now looks to have a pretty solid lead. I don't know that it's necessarily over yet, but my poll this time at least has Lieberman with a 20-point lead.
Lamont 51-40 ahead among Democrats, but Republicans solidly for Lieberman. You say Lieberman has taken on the political standing of a Republican.
Basically, yes, and you've got official Republicandom if not vocally, certainly quietly backing Lieberman, because Alan Schlesinger, the Republican contender, is down, way down in the single digits. I have to tell you that my view of this was that Schlesinger would eventually pick up and not get 4 or 5%, but 11, 12, 15% by virtue of being on the Republican line, and that each of those votes would come away from Lieberman. But right now, that doesn't seem to be materialized.
There's the very latest on the polls, just out in the last day and 2 days. House, at this point, looks like Democrats could take it. Senate still looks like it may be in the Republican camp. It could all change, but there it is today. John Zogby at Zogby International, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's turn to Washington. Janet Hook joins us. She's political correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Janet, there's been an awful lot of furor about the House Republican leadership, calls for Dennis Hastert to step down. Where does that stand today?
Well, Tom, this whole Foley scandal really has been this huge boulder in the pond of congressional politics. And for days now, it's been consuming House Republicans and its leadership. The issue for the leadership is the question of whether they got early signals about Foley's misconduct and whether they did enough to address the problems that they were alerted to.
Insiders now saying they did. Kirk Fordham says 3 years ago. Hastert says no. Where does the call stand on the Republican side? You know, where are the power brokers lining up here for Hastert to stay or go?
Well, it's sort of a spectrum of opinion. There are a lot of Republicans who are kind of being sort of quiet about this to wait to see how it plays out. There have been several conservative activists outside Congress, including, you know, the Washington Times editorial page, that have called on Hastert to resign, that he should have acted more aggressively to address the issue. His own lieutenants, the other senior Republican leaders, John Boehner, the House Majority Leader, and Roy Blunt, the House Majority Whip, have said things that tend to put the responsibility on Hastert and seem to be an effort to distance themselves from responsibility for the scandal, which is not a good sign for Dennis Hastert.
And how about Tom Reynolds of New York, who we're supposed to speak with in just a moment here, chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee? How's he come down on his boss, Hastert, and how's his own future look?
Well, it's a complicated issue for Reynolds because he was one of the leaders who had gotten an early word about concerns about Foley's behavior. He says that he alerted Hastert last summer or last spring, but that Hastert claims that he doesn't remember the conversation. So it's kind of a he said situation here.
House Ethics Committee meeting in closed session today. Are we likely to hear anything anytime soon from that bipartisan meeting?
It will probably be a while before we hear any conclusion to the investigation, but they presumably will begin some kind of investigation, and that may be about all we'll hear today, is that an investigation has begun.
Janet, we heard just now from John Zogby on the polls. He says the House looks like, at this point, it is very likely to go Democrat, maybe not the Senate. Does that line up with the chatter in Washington? How are the, you know, polls aside, how are people finding their gut check on this race midterms?
Well, the situation, even before the Foley scandal broke, Republicans were clearly very nervous about losing the House, less so about the Senate. The unfortunate thing for Republicans is that within the last few weeks, they had started to feel like the erosion of their power or the erosion of their political support and the momentum had begun to shift, that things had stopped going from bad to worse. They had a big political factor was they saw a drop in gas prices, which means a lot in the pocketbook issues that determine a lot of voters' attitudes. President Bush had done a big initiative to promote their strength on fighting the war on terrorism. But with this, whatever shred of momentum they had has disappeared.
Janet Hook with the LA Times in Washington. Janet, thank you very much for being with us.
Sure.
We're joined right now from Buffalo, New York, where he's on the campaign trail, by Congressman Tom Reynolds. He is chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, his task to get that majority back in the House. He's representative from New York's 26th District, which includes seven western New York counties, first sworn into Congress in January 1999. Congressman Reynolds, thanks for being with us.
Tom, great to be on.
Here you are. This you surely didn't want and didn't expect. You're on the campaign trail. Are your constituents throwing it in your face? Mark Foley.
Now, Tom, I love the campaign. One of the things I've been quoted, I guess, in upstate New York is to say that government and politics is my vocation, it's my avocation, it's my hobby. And so, one, I love being out in the street in western New York. I also love having been given the opportunity to be the strategist to take a tough reelection, a wind in our face, to get this majority ready for a reelection. And so it's a double-pronged task, just like every person has responsibilities of a committee or committee chairmanship or leadership. Mine is the responsibility of the campaign, but also to do my job as a congressman and to do my job as a candidate in Congress.
We want to hear about that strategy, but as Janet Hook said, you've got a boulder in the pond this week with Mark Foley. What about it? I mean, I'm looking here at the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, a newspaper up toward your turf. And, you know, they say pressure on Reynolds, your top aide, of course, resigned, Kirk Fordham. He's saying that the top leadership knew about this 3 years ago, that you knew about it last spring, at least, about inappropriate email messages sent by Foley to teenage Paige. Of course, you chipped in to help Foley with his reelection campaign with money from your own campaign chest. How does the Foley piece sort out for you?
I want to answer one question about my campaign or about Foley as it relates in, here in Western New York, and then I want to talk about the national races and my responsibility in NRCC. First of all, Rodney Alexander came to me and said there was overly friendly email conversations between Foley and a former page of his that came aware to him after the Katrina storm. And he talked to his the parents of the boy, and they did not want to pursue this further in the interest of their child. It was an over-friendly email. It was reviewed by two reporters from the St. Petersburg Times covering the story that found nothing there that they could report, particularly with the parents not going on record. The Miami Herald has come out this week saying that they did not pursue this just based on what was out there. I've learned now that somebody may have had the emails and gave it to the FBI. They reviewed it and did not. And so as we move forward, Mark Foley sought re-election, was running down there. I believe he would have won down there. This past Friday, ABC had terribly despicable, deplorable emails that they were about to release. When I became aware of them, I asked Kirk Fordham to see if he could get Foley's resignation.
Kirk Fordham, who worked for you and for Foley.
Hear me out, please, and then I'll answer your question.
Yeah.
And within 2 hours, we had Mr. Foley's resignation at the House, and he was out of Congress. And so as we continue to get the facts out, the time schedule, there are two sets of emails. The first set, no one saw that had any criminal intent. I wish that maybe we could have seen that Foley lied to the Page Board last November. But we have taken the action. When I was aware of it, I passed it on to the Speaker. When I became aware of these despicable, deplorable emails, I moved to get his resignation, which was obtained.
What about the Speaker? What about the Speaker himself?
Hear me, please.
Yeah.
As the facts come out in my district, we begin to see that people begin to see that I took logical, common sense steps of notifying my supervisor. My supervisor was the Speaker of the House, that I had heard this conversation from my colleague Rodney Alexander.
So he says he doesn't remember being informed by you, Congressman.
Now that I found that the Foley had done these terrible, despicable things, that I also was working to get his resignation, which occurred 2 hours later. I believe my district is beginning to see the facts now, and we will get back in my district to the issues of jobs and taxes, and 3 weeks is a lifetime in a campaign. I've been elected over 30 years. I know full well what needs to be done in my district, as well as we look at the country.
Open question in Washington today is Dennis Hastert's leadership itself. You've said very prominently, I told my supervisor about this. He says he doesn't remember. If you told your supervisor and not enough was done, should he resign? Many Republicans are asking for that.
Tommy has also said that he wouldn't deny that I did.
No, he just says he doesn't remember. So does that mean...
I think you want to look at his comments, and then I want to either move on to the race or stand by what I've said to the media for the last several days.
But I'm asking you on the issue of Dennis Hastert. Should he resign or should he stay in his post? If you told him...
Let me make very clear what I believe the Speaker said. He did not recall my conversation. Mm-hmm. As I understand, he did not recall Boehner's conversation, the majority leader. But he said, I won't deny that it didn't happen. And I'm telling you that I have stated to him and I have stated to the public the fact that I had talked to the Speaker and made him aware of Rodney Alexander's conversation with me.
George Will, conservative, denied that
conversation has happened.
Yeah, George Will says today in the Washington Post, may I just put this to you, he says that Dennis Hastert seems not to be not just confessing a cover-up, but also complaining that the cover-up was undone by bad manners, and ABC putting this out there. You know there are prominent Republicans who have said, Washington Times, Christian Right folks and others, Hastert should go. I'd just like to get you on the record of whether you think you should stay or go.
Tom, I've been on the record for 3 days. I support the Speaker. I also support a full investigation. I have supported an investigation of the FBI. I've supported the investigation where the Speaker has invited Governor Jeb Bush to have the Florida State Police come in. I have also supported and voted for, which I think was unanimous in a bipartisan fashion, that the Ethics Committee. I have nothing to hide. I want it all out.
Are you going to win the House?
I think we hold the House. It's going to be wind in your face, but when you look at these issues, is this something that I have to address in my district, which I fully intend to? Sure. When you look at incidents that affect all politics as local in my strategy, Tom, it is that if you're somehow involved in this issue, it may be something you have to explain. So in my district, I will have to explain where I've been, just as I've been on this show. When you look at around the country, it's going to be what those issues are in those respective districts that's going to be there. And while I have great respect for John Zogby, we have a lot of internal polling. I've seen a lot of public polling, and we see when the Democrats make a public polling. And are there close races as we move into the last 30 days? You bet. And this is now when races are made into finality and they gel. Or they don't.
The party's clearly in trouble here. Why do you think it's in this much trouble? Why is it a jump ball? Why is it an open question in October of 2006, Tom Reynolds, whether or not you'll hold the House?
Well, I believe we hold the House. And
why is it in question?
Because we do all politics as local, and these races are won on a seat-by-seat basis till they add up to 218. Now, we have more Republicans than we have had since 1946.
Mm-hmm.
We had 232 seats as we began the 109th Congress. So are there seats in jeopardy? Sure there are. There's always seats in jeopardy. Do we have opportunities in our seats? Absolutely. I like where we are in Vermont. I like Georgia 8 and Georgia 12, where we have challenges where former incumbent members of Congress. I like Iowa 3, where Lamberti is a co-president of the Iowa Senate. I like West Virginia. I like where we are in Illinois in the race against Melissa Bean. And I like where we are in Oregon 5 against Hooley. But it's a race-by-race aspect of where all politics is local, and the voters will see a clear contrast between Republicans with a positive vision and a record of accomplishment and a B-list of candidates who are basically blame and complain Democrats who embrace some of the failed tax and spend policies of the past or are looking for the issue of the day that's coming out of DCCC.
Congressman, the Wall Street Journal, which has been a pretty solid Republican supporting editorial page, says today, the flops of the party now in control of Congress have been significant. Taxes, health care, Social Security, immigration, earmarks, Abramoff, flops, they say. What about the can't-get-it-done Congress reputation that's out there on this Congress? The Wall Street Journal complaining about it there. Though they want Republicans in power, but what do you say to their critique of the congressional record?
I've been to the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. Sometimes I remind them, hey, are we perfect? No. Can we get more done of a conservative agenda of lower taxes, less spending, a strong military, homeland security? We're working towards that. Is it perfect? No. Are we working hard to achieve it? Yes, and it is better. And I remind them the alternative is the liberal failed policies of the previous 40 years before we took control. That puts San Francisco liberal, Nancy Pelosi as speaker. It puts people like Steny Hoyer or Jack Murtha as a majority leader. It could put Rahm Emanuel as a Chicago politician in his leadership. And then we look at the committees. A very liberal Charlie Rangel as chair of the Ways and Means Committee. Back comes Conyers of Detroit as the Judiciary Committee chairman. One of the most liberal members of Congress, Henry Waxman, comes back as government reforms chairman. And so when you go down through the chairman's list of who runs the Congress, the Wall Street Journal and others who look at this, can we do more? Sure. Have we made it better? Absolutely. But take a look at the alternative. It'll knock the aspect of having a smaller, smarter government bad about it. When Rangel says, who could be the Democrat incoming chair of Ways and Means, no doubt about it, we will see tax hikes because we will undo all of the Bush's first term tax cuts. You know the country would change a dramatic direction of having more spending, more taxes, and the failed liberal government that has preceded the Republicans taking control.
Well, we'll see what Americans say. Congressman Reynolds, we've got a lot of listeners who would like to speak with you. I want to begin to invite them in, if we may. Tom Reynolds, chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, is with us. Let's see, from your district, Amherst, New York, Bill is calling. Hi, Bill, you're on the air.
Yes, sir, and thank you for taking the call.
Good to have you.
Mr. Reynolds, I understand that you, in your role as the chairman of the Republican reelection campaign committee, accepted campaign funds from Mr. Foley. Did you, and if so, was it before or after you notified the speaker about your concerns concerning his relationship with Pages?
Tom Reynolds?
Sure, and I think there's a very good question there. Let's go back to a couple of facts. What I reported to the speaker was that Congressman Rodney Alexander had brought to my attention that there was an overly friendly email that was between he and a former page. So when I turned that over to the speaker, the aspect, I had never seen what the first email was, which has been reviewed by both newspapers and the media, as well as apparently the FBI, and certainly the Page Board, who met with him in November of the previous year.
But I take it you're saying, yes, you took the money after.
Hear me out, and I'm going to answer both questions. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that we realize that someone has reviewed where this was and taken action. When we look at Congressman Foley, he, as well as almost every Republican giving to the NRCC to help the campaigns this fall, and that's what Mr. Foley did. He wrote a check for $100,000 out of campaign funds that he raised in Florida.
So the answer is yes, you took it after informing.
To the National Republican Congressional Committee, just as the Democrats have raised that type of money from their Democratic colleagues. It's a fact that we have a fundraising process of asking members to help the campaign committee. Mr. Foley, like almost every other Republican, almost every other Democrat, did give money to the campaign committee that he legally raised and has been reported to the FEC.
Bill, that sounds like a yes. I want to get another call, if I may. Congressman from Columbia, South Carolina, Matt is on the line. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
We're good. What do you think?
I just want to say I'm a registered Republican, and I've always voted for Republicans. This has given me a headache. Both sides are giving me the headache. The whole country's about ready to get up and move to New Zealand. Sir, you and you people in Washington need to get it together on both sides, because this sex scandal, we had to put up with this with Clinton. Now we have to put up this with you. You guys need to watch your backs, because if a third party comes in, you both are finished, because I feel that this country is getting sick of both parties.
Matt, Congressman Reynolds says, look, it didn't look that bad when I first heard about it, and I passed it up the chain of command. Is that good enough for you?
You know, it's a ridiculous point. First of all, the fact that the guy that's he's paging a page or, well, you know, doing whatever he's doing with these kids, that has nothing. I mean, it's unethical. Yes, the guy's an older man. He's a 16-year-old kid or whatever. I don't even know the details, because I'm getting a headache listening to this fella not even answering your yes or no question from the last caller. And I'm a Republican. This has gone way too far on both sides.
Matt, thanks very much for your call. Let me get one more from Van Horn, Iowa. Tom is on the line. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask Congressman Reynolds a couple questions. First of all, he keeps stating his party line and giving a speech, and then he asks a question and answers it himself instead of answering your question.
So what do you want to know, Tom?
What are they planning on doing if they retain majority on trying to take away our Social Security? And what do they mean by when they keep talking about tax and spend Democrats, it's like borrow and spend Republicans with tax cuts. I don't understand how we can keep going.
Tom, our time is short. Let us pick that up. What about Social Security and the deficits? Social Security unsolved deficits have grown, Tom Reynolds.
Tom, first of all, and it's a great question. First on Social Security, every member will have their own opinion on it. It'll be what you see in your local district, but I can tell you mine. I am not going to do anything that cuts benefits. I'm not going to do anything that raises the age limit for Social Security, and I'm not going to raise taxes to pay for it. I'm willing to look at what we do to meet the needs we will have for the 2034 time frame, when Social Security is going to need to have money because it's going to run out of money.
What about those giant deficits taxes, that you've got there?
Our tax cuts that were done by the Bush 81 and 83 tax cuts and the other things we've done with the marriage penalty and child tax credit, we have seen our economy stronger than we could have imagined. We're in about the 19th quarter of pro-growth economy.
But it's when our grandkids that pay for deficits, right?
Tax cuts. We found that we actually saw $95 billion more money coming into our budget last year than we had anticipated. And if you look, we are beginning to cut that deficit down because people are actually spending more or doing more things with their money that they're keeping in their pocket versus having sent it to Washington.
Congressman Reynolds, thanks for being with us.
Tom, thank you.
We're talking this hour about Republican election prospects and House leadership in the sudden season of the Foley scandal. We're joined right now from Washington by Matthew Continetti. He's associate editor of the Weekly Standard, conservative stalwart there, author of The K Street Gang, The Rise and Fall of the Republican Machine. Matthew Continetti, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
We all just heard Congressman Tom Reynolds, who's in charge of getting that House majority tied up again for the Republicans, say they're going to do it. Here we are. It's about a month till Election Day. Do you believe it? Will they?
No, absolutely not. And certainly not if going into the election with about 3 weeks left, they follow Congressman Reynolds' talking points. You know, I was listening to your interview, and quite frankly, it was pathetic. What was Tom Reynolds emphasizing here? One, he was saying that 3 weeks is a lifetime in a campaign.
Mm.
It's a quote of his. So what does that mean? He means he believes that this issue is going to go away. All right? It's not. He kept emphasizing...
This issue being Foley, you're saying.
Foley, right,
mm-hmm.
the Foley issue. He
mm-hmm.
said at least three times, maybe
yeah.
more, all politics is local, echoing the Tip O'Neill mm-hmm. famous Democratic speaker line.
Yeah.
You know, for one thing, that's an intellectually debatable statement in our new globalized world.
Media is local, too. It goes
yeah,
everywhere.
Absolutely. Media is global. We've run campaigns on national issues. Certainly the White House wanted this to be a national issue campaign going into 2006, emphasizing
security,
national security.
Right.
Absolutely. But now that we have a new national issue, and that is whether how the House leadership responded to, you know, allegations or inappropriate behavior by one of its members.
Do you see a cover-up here, Mr. Continetti?
I don't. At the moment, I don't, because what we have here is just confusion, disarray and backbiting. But I don't see a cover-up.
But here, just to hone in on that for a moment,
sure.
Kirk Fordham worked for Tom Reynolds, who we just talked to, and for Mark Foley very closely. I mean, how could someone be that close and not have some sense of what was going on here?
Well, that's what I think leads to the confusion, disarray, sense of... Here's a major thing, just listening to Congressman Reynolds, mm-hmm. and largely you can talk about the GOP in general, a disconnect from reality I think we're seeing here. I'm reading Bob Novak's column right before we came on here today, and I'd urge everybody to read it. And he reports that Foley was seriously considering a 2006 Senate campaign. Now, you read that, and no one's disputing that, and it's just amazing. It's so out of left field.
Well, in his own speeches, I mean, in 2005, here he is, you know, calling for legislation on sex offenders. This is Mark Foley saying, we need to completely change the way we treat sex offenders. They're not petty criminals. They prey on children like animals.
Right. Well, it's just, it really is. It's pathetic. Here's another thing, and this is, I think, the major reason that the Foley scandal and the Republican leadership's response to it has legs. That's because, you know, I wrote a book about congressional corruption. We have stories of congressional corruption coming out over the last 2 years of this Congress. People look at Washington, though, outside Washington, and they expect a certain level of, you know, backroom dealing and whatnot. When they see something like this, and I've talked to people, you know, throughout Washington area, throughout the country in the past, and they're saying this is about kids. And, everyone can understand, and certainly millions of mothers and fathers in the United States can understand what happens with kids. And you're sending kids into the nation's capital to participate in this PAGE program, and a voter is saying this, you expect them to be protected. Well, that's obviously not what happened. I was fascinated, Tom, by a caller from South Carolina, from Columbia, who said he was a Republican, expressed outrage, said we're waiting for a third party. That sounded to me like a Perot voter. And, you know, the great success of the GOP for the last decade has been keeping those Perot voters inside the fold. I think we may be seeing that come unhinged.
But there's no Perot in this, race that's all over the country. I mean, you're a conservative stalwart. You're a Republican, but you almost sound like you're... Are you fearing or wishing for a Republican defeat in November?
Well, you never wish for a defeat, because certainly, you know, there is always the chance when conservatives are in power that you may have a conservative victory. But the question here has been, I think, are these conservatives in power? And certainly, you know, we saw the third prong. I mentioned all politics local. I mentioned the fact that Tom Reynolds hoped that Mark Foley would go away. The third prong I got from his interview there was the fear of what would happen if the Democrats take over Congress. Now, it just strikes me as a complete non sequitur to think that if the Dems take over Congress, the tax cuts would be repealed, because, you know, in our constitutional system, obviously President Bush would veto any attempts to take away the tax cuts.
But that's not just Tom Reynolds. That's Ken Mellman, head of the Republican. They're all saying if the Democrats take over, we're going to see impeachment. We're going to see mayhem in Congress.
That's not a winning strategy. To win, you need a forward strategy. I thought we saw that in the last few weeks prior to this scandal breaking. We saw that talking about interrogation. We saw that talking about moving forward on the war on terror. That was a forward strategy, and the president was outlining an agenda and really recognizing the true differences in the approach to the war on terror between the two parties. And there are those differences. Now that the scandal has erupted, it shows no signs of going away. All of those differences are masked, and the Republicans are forced to fall back on this. Well, at least we're not as liberal as the other guys.
The Zogby poll says at this point, things could change, at this point, House goes to Dems, Senate stays with Republicans. Do you see it that way?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that the Zogby polling seems to fit certainly with the conventional wisdom is in Washington. And the truth is a lot of these things can swing very quickly, and certainly the polls right before Election Day will give us the best picture of what will take place. But the question to me is, you know, what are the X factors here that might change the dynamic over the next month? And listening to Congressman Reynolds, you don't see that coming from the Republican side. You don't see any opportunity. Since Congress is out, you don't see any opportunity for President Bush to, say, bring up new terror legislation and change the debate that way. So in a sense, this scandal has come at exactly the wrong time for Republicans, because they really, since they're now campaigning and they're scattered throughout the country, they have no sense of coordination. They have no opportunities to kind of get back to the floor, introduce new legislation.
Hard to pull it together when everybody's out on the hustings.
Absolutely.
And an awful lot of headwind here. No small pieces of it justified. Matthew Cutnetty, stand by. I want to bring our listeners in. Sandy's calling from Charleston, Rhode Island. Charleston. Hi, Sandy. You're on the air.
Hi. Oh, that Tom Reynolds guy. He is the very epitome of why I'm an independent voter, and we're struggling here with the Lincoln-Chafee White House election. And I voted for Lincoln Chafee. I voted for his dad.
These are the two candidates for the Senate in Rhode Island, right?
Yes.
Yep.
And I voted, like I said, I voted for him and his dad, and I want to vote for him again. But I am so afraid of the Republicans, and that Tom Reynolds guy is just the epitome of what we're afraid of. It's like they've just, the war, the economy is great for people with money, but those of us that don't have it, we're struggling harder than we ever have. And the environment, they've shut down the libraries of the EPA. Nobody's talking about that. What's going on in our country is just freaking me out, and I'm afraid of the Republicans, to be very honest. I think Bush, they've been worse than anybody ever has.
But you've been a Republican party, though, of the Chafee stripe. Sandy, thanks for your – have I got that right?
Oh, I'm an independent voter. I'm a very liberal. I'm not a Republican, but I have voted for him because I'm open-minded, and mm-hmm. I vote for the man, not the party. But now, this for the first time, I might have to vote for the party against the Republicans because of this Tom Reynolds guy and what they seem to stand for.
Well, we've got it. Sandy, thanks for your call. Let me go to St. Matthews, South Carolina, and Kevin. Kevin, you're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the big problems that the Republicans are having is the war in Iraq over there, and not really the war because people... If there's a reason to go to war, the American people are not against going to war, but I think the American people, they misjudge the American people when they spending all these billions of dollars over there rebuilding Iraq. The American people, if they ask them, I believe 9 out of 10 would say let them rebuild themselves. The Iraqis were rebuilding.
And we haven't heard much about it in the days since Foley hit the airwaves. Kevin, thanks very much for your call. Matthew Cotinetti, stand by. I want to invite another voice into our conversation, if I may. Joining us from Manassas, Virginia, Richard Viguerie, longtime conservative activist, pioneered ideological direct mail campaigns in the 60s and 70s, founded Conservative Digest magazine, author of Conservatives Betrayed. Richard Viguerie, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
First of all, I want to get you and Matthew on the record on Dennis Hastert. Should he stay or go? Do you need new leadership for the Republicans in the House or not?
Well, Tom, in my book that you just referenced, mm-hmm. Conservatives Betrayed, How George W. Bush and Other Big Government Republicans Hijacked the Conservative Cause, which was written months ago, I called for a clean sweep of the Republican leaders in the House and the Senate. I think that, quite frankly, all of them should be gone, not only Hastert, but Boehner, Roy Blunt. Of course, Frist is leaving, but all of them. I think to go into the political promised land, we're going to need new leaders. I think these leaders are just kind of green eye shade managers. You can either to govern, you can either manage the government, which they do, or you can lead the country. And people like John F. Kennedy and Ronald Reagan were leaders. He led the country, and Republicans, unrelated to Foley, need new leadership.
You're a dyed-in-the-wool conservative. Do you see that leadership coming up, or do you see the Democrats coming up and taking the Congress and never mind about all that?
Well, as you all were talking about before I got on here, I certainly don't advocate a Republican loss, don't want it, but I also don't fear it. And I urge conservatives out there not to fear Democrats coming to office, because invariably that's when conservatives make their best gains. After Ford lost in 76, Reagan came along 4 years later, 1980, and that would have never happened if Ford had won in 1976. We would not have gotten a Republican Congress in 1994 if George H.W. Bush had been reelected in 1992. So while you don't advocate it, you don't want it, don't fear it, and we expect that we will make great advances for the conservative cause if the Democrats do achieve office here, hopefully just very temporarily.
If not now, later, you say. Matthew Cotinetti, how about you on Dennis Hastert? Where do you stand? Do you think he should stay or go?
Well, I mean, I think at this point, as we were discussing, I mean, he's not going to be speaker anyway in January, so there's really kind of a moot point to him resigning at this moment. I do see something very interesting just developing in the past 48 hours here in Washington. Tom, and that is splits within the Republican leadership. You go back to this Novak column I mentioned earlier. He has unnamed sources within the Republican leadership. Who knows who they are, but they're high ups. Backbiting against Reynolds, against Hastert.
John Boehner publicly being pretty noncommittal.
Boehner is certainly noncommittal in this. You're absolutely right. If those rifts continue to grow over the next few weeks, we may see actually new leadership emerge prior to the election. But as it stands, I mean, the way things are going, it's really kind of a silly discussion to ask whether Hastert goes now or goes in January.
Let's take a call from
Richard.
Yes.
Point. I think Hastert will be gone from the House within 6 or 7 months regardless. I think he's damaged goods. And just like Gingrich left the House after he lost the speakership, Bob Livingston did the same. They left the House. I think Hastert will probably leave sometime next year.
Let's go to Newburyport, Massachusetts. And Todd, hi, Todd. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
We're okay.
I wanted to make just a couple points, actually.
Mm-hmm.
First point is, I think that over the past few days, I listen to NPR quite frequently, and I hear many times people making the association between gay people and them having a higher proclivity to having abnormal thoughts of sex, preoccupied by sex, I believe I heard.
We heard that very explicitly from Paul Weyrich last night, talking with Michelle Norris on All
exactly,
Things Considered.
That's exactly what I'm referring to. I am not gay, okay?
Okay?
I have absolutely no problem with gay people. I know many very fine gay people. I'm a normal adult male, and let me tell you something. I think about sex fairly frequently, and I don't think any man that I don't know, that I know, does not think the same. How can they be trying to, like, pigeonhole gay people?
We'll pick that up, Todd. What's your other point?
My other point, and I hope that many people that run our government are listening to this, I am disgusted by what I hear, what I see every single day. These people are running our government. They represent us not only in this country, but they represent us to the world. We would not accept from our school children them acting like this in school and backstabbing each other, not getting it done, lying.
Todd, our time is short, but let us pick those up. Richard Viguerie, let me come first to you with the homosexuality, the gay issue. We heard Paul Weyrich, you know, on national radio last night, essentially saying if this guy's gay, he shouldn't, that's Mark Foley, he shouldn't have been there or shouldn't have been in any leadership position on the committee where he was. How do you look at gays and the Republican Party? Is there a place for them, or in your conservative wing, is there not?
Well, there's a place. But it should not be where you have responsibility for young boys. You wouldn't put a promiscuous heterosexual in charge of young girls, and you don't put my own church, Catholic Church, has had a horrendous experience with that. You do not put people who are attracted to young boys in charge of them. It's just it's irresponsible. If Congressman Hastert, son or grandson, saw emails to his son or grandson saying, what's your birthday? How old are you? Send me a picture.
And there's a lot more than that in these text messages.
Right.
It gets pornographic.
Just text message, but just the emails before we saw the text message, he would have been outraged. He would not have walked away from those emails and the 50-year-old homosexual sending those to his son or grandson. Those are the footprints of a sexual predator. Anybody knows that.
Matthew Continetti, is there a gay issue for the Republican Party out of this, the kind of explicit attack on gays we heard from Paul Weyrich? Is that a problem? Is that the way it's going to be?
Well, when I hear questions like this, this is why I go back to what Congressman Reynolds said, saying that there's 3 weeks before the election, this is all going to go away. He's wrong. And the reason he's wrong there is, as we hear from the caller and as we've heard from Paul Weyrich and others, leaders of the social right, this is no longer simply about one man. It's now turned into a values question. It's now, like, just like the Clinton scandal, it's now a question about sex, about the place of gays in our national life, and that means it's not going to go away anytime soon.
Richard Viguerie, we've got half a minute. Will the values voters, quote-unquote, the Christian right, if you will they stay home? Will they sit this one out?
I suspect a high percent will. Karl Rove famously said after the 2000 election there were 4 million Christian value voters that did not show up. Since they've been betrayed and lied to and dissed for the last 6 years, a high percent are going to stay home. They don't feel that they've got a stake in this president's and this Congress's reelection. So I think that you're going to see them stay home and wait for somebody that's going to come along dealing with their issues, which the Republicans have not done.
Richard Viguerie, author of Conservatives Betrayed. Mr. Viguerie, thanks very much for being with us this hour.
My pleasure, Tom.
And Matthew Continetti, associate editor at the Weekly Standard, author of The K Street Gang. Mr. Continetti, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.